It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Mayor Phil Goff, how are you this morning?
Atamaria, very well, thank you. Yeah, just fighting my way through the normal things that plague my life and trying to run a bureaucracy, but apart from that, I'm good.
It is it's a particularly sort of changeable time at the moment here in Tāmaki. We have finally had some solid dates, though, for what's happening with the end of this lockdown period that we're in. And we're going to be able to get back to the hairdressers from Thursday, if you can get a appointment, that is, of course.
Yeah.
I wondered what's been some of the discussion about how the vaccine passport is going to be rolled out, if there's been any conversation with council about that management at the moment.
Yeah, you're right. First of all, we have got some solid dates, November 25th, and I think my wife and my daughter have both made their bookings at the hairdressers, but it's going to be a busy time being a barber or a hairdresser, I think, over the next 4 weeks, as they've got the backlog to catch up on. December the 3rd, we come into the traffic light system, and that means hospitality will open up for those that are vaccinated. And then December the 15th, we can travel outside Auckland. So we've got those three dates. Vaccine passports, I downloaded mine. Pretty straightforward, no particular problems. Those that don't have access to computers, or a cell phone, they'll probably be able to get a hard copy if they go to a place like the library, and they'll help them download that. The way in which they scan those vaccine passports, I think the information's coming out on that today. The app that will do that will present some challenges. I know hospitality is saying, look, we've got young staff, and how are we going to say to somebody, look, you don't have proof that you're vaccinated, you can't come in. So that will be a little, could be in some instances a little confrontational, but I'm not sure how you do it other than have the hospitality industry take responsibility themselves, and hairdressers and people running events, to say this is what's required. And, you know, it's a bit like a bar, you know, I'm sorry, you don't look like you're 18. Can you provide proof of evidence that you are? So it's not unknown, but it will be a bit challenging, but I think that's the only way that you can do it.
Now, something we did discuss a couple of weeks ago, and I know has been discussed broadly in many spaces, is what it's going to look like for hospitality when we do head back out and we're able to go to cafes and bars. And al fresco dining, you know, eating on the street, is something that's been talked about a lot. Where have those discussions got to between council, central government, and the hospitality industry?
Yeah, well, first of all, council's some weeks ago announced measures that it will that it's taking right now to help businesses make more use of outdoor space. So we've fast-tracked new licences and extensions to food-only outdoor dining applications. We've waived fees for new applications or extensions of existing street trading licences. And we've extended new street trading licences this lockdown without cost. So we've approved the vast majority of those that have come through. Not huge numbers. You know, you're only talking just into double figures of people that have sought an extension of outdoor dining areas. The other outstanding issue, we think we've resolved the question of having to have two lots of toilets. Apparently that was under the old health orders, and they no longer apply. So that's a bit of a relief for restaurants that we're worried about, you know, the prospect of putting up port-a-loos or something like that mm-hmm. really doesn't add to the dining experience. And the other thing is then whether the government will move quickly enough on trying to make sure that we can extend alcohol licences to al fresco. We rely on police, and we rely on health authorities, and we've put a case up to government that they could temporarily change the legislation to enable these licences to be more readily and more quickly granted. We're still waiting to hear back from government on that. But, you know, the truth is probably a lot of the pressure on that will be dealt with in the 3rd of December traffic light system, where you can cater for up to 100 people. The only main requirement is that there's got to be that metre separation in people, and that's for vaccinated. If you're unvaccinated, it'll be tough. The same rules will apply as alert level, what would have been 3.3, and I think that the choice that the cafe owners and the restaurateurs will take is sorry, in order to be served here, you need to show proof of vaccination. That's tough, but it might focus people's minds that haven't got vaccinated on the need to do so.
Now, obviously, a lot of what we're talking about at the moment is immediate changes and for the short term, because all of this is happening quite quickly. But we are looking into the long term. COVID's going to be with us for a while. We're learning new ways to manage that and new ways we're going to have to live to manage that as well. What is the conversation, if there is a conversation at the moment, happening about longer term planning, particularly around urban planning in a city like Auckland, for building in a little bit more of this like outdoor space and these larger spaces, so that when we are gathering in these settings, it's more COVID friendly? Is that a conversation that's happening for that long term yet?
Yeah, it's a long-term conversation, actually, because, you know, any of us that have gone to Europe and places like that, you know, we know how much we enjoyed al fresco dining. The difference there being that the temperatures were usually in the mid-30s or down to at least the high 20s at night when you're dining out. But I think that will catch on in New Zealand. Look, the longer-term thing is more about the need to maintain high levels of vaccination coverage. And, you know, we've done pretty well. I got the latest figures out where, you know, double vaxxed are now 90, 87 and 85% in each of the district health boards, and all in the, you know, coming close to the mid-90s for the first dose. But people will have to get their booster dose. I mean, if we look at Europe and you see what's happening there with a new wave of lockdowns, places like the Netherlands and Austria, they are saying that after 6 months, you start to lose some of the value of the vaccination, and people will need booster shots, so we'll need to do that. We will need to look at approving, after obviously close scrutiny, the drugs that you can take if you get COVID to lessen the impact on you. I think we will have to have a longer-term emphasis on improving ICU units, although so far I'm scared to say this, but the numbers in ICU have stayed fairly consistent around the 6%. And actually, the epidemiologists like Michael Baker and the modellers like Sean Hendy are saying, look, our R rate, our reproduction rate of the virus has come down, and it looks like we're plateaued. Now, I think that's great news, but I'm just a bit nervous about being too predictive about that too early. What we'll also see is we'll see our kids, I think, probably early next year, vaccinated at school, the 5 to 12-year-olds. And that's going to be really important as well. So those are the main things. You're right. We have to live with this virus. Some of us fondly imagined at the beginning it would come and go like SARS or something like that. No, this is different. This is longer term, and we can't lock down again except in extreme circumstances. Therefore, we've got to take the precautions and make the precautions. And that might include, a bit like in Asia, seeing more people wearing masks a lot of the time, including when they've got a cold or the flu.
When we do open the borders up, so we're going to be able to leave Tamaki Makaurau and people will be able to come in from the 15th of December, what are you expecting we're going to see, particularly when it comes to this Christmas period? You know, there's some concerns about tourism into less vaccinated areas, but also what's it going to mean for tourism here in Tamaki Makaurau? Are there any predictions from the council around that yet?
Yeah, they are only predictions because nobody really knows. What we do know is that Auckland is now coming into the 100th day of lockdown tomorrow, are going to be quite keen to get out and about. So I think you will see, you'll see what normally happens at summer, actually. Everybody heads out to the beach, and if they've got batches, to their batches. But they will relish having that freedom back to be able to travel and reacquaint with family and friends. So I think you'll see a significant amount of people moving out, though some people are saying to me there's a lot of people still in the community that are quite cautious. They know that COVID is here. They know that it will go across the whole country, and people might, counteracting the desire to use your freedom, it might be, we'll just play this one carefully. Will there be people coming to Auckland? You won't need to show proof of double vax to get to Auckland. I think the proof has to be the other way, going out rather than coming in.
I think it also depends on your transport method as well. If you're catching a flight,
you have to, or you have to have the test within 72 hours. So it'll be interesting to see whether, I think it'll take a while for Auckland tourism to recover, simply because the rest of the country has seen us as the COVID capital.
We have had a couple of questions from listeners about staying in the city. Somebody would like to know, are we going to be able to camp in some of our regional parks here in Tamaki Makaurau? That's not been something that's been open necessarily in lockdown. Will that be opening up when we hit the traffic light system?
My presumption is yes, but it's an interesting question. I haven't seen a definitive statement from, our regional parks are now open, but our camping hasn't been. But I'm presuming that will change with the traffic light system on the 3rd of December, but I'll need to double-check that one.
Now, I just wanted to briefly ask you, because this is another ongoing situation, about the bipartisan housing announcement that we heard from the government and National a few weeks ago, and that's going to mean some big changes for density housing in cities like Auckland. There has been quite a lot of discussion around this. What is the council's current position on the proposed bill at the moment?
Well, you can see our submission online that we made to the Select Committee, and I spoke to the Select Committee on Friday, and I spoke focusing on two things. First of all, we already have a strong Auckland Unitary Plan that has promoted intensification to the extent that over two-thirds of all of our new building consents are now for intensive housing, apartments or terrace housing. Secondly, we don't have a problem with the shortage of zoned land for housing. The Unitary Plan created 900,000 potential sites for zoning for housing. We have a problem with the cost of infrastructure to service that housing, and that's what we said Parliament should be focused on. The two problems with their legislation, one is that their minimum standards for intensive housing aren't good enough. They don't cover for people having sufficient winter sunlight. They don't cover for having even a decent minimal amount of outdoor living space. They don't cover for having a decent area of shared living room space, you know, like your lounge in these new units. And what I said to the parliamentarians is, you wouldn't live in the sort of houses that might be built under these design rules. Why would you expect people of lesser income means to have to live in poorly designed houses that aren't good for quality of life? You need to look at that, and they've agreed to look at that with us to lift those design standards. The second thing is, we've said intensification in the obvious areas, city centre, town centres, main arterial routes, near transport hubs. They've allowed this intensification to happen miles away, kilometres away from where there's public transport, and that's dumb, because that's creating intensification when you don't have the infrastructure to support it. So we've asked for those changes.
Well, we'll definitely be coming back to talk about this a little bit more in future weeks, as I'm sure we'll always be coming back to talk about COVID at the moment. But thank you very much for your time this morning, Mayor Phil Goff. It's always great to have you on the show. Have a good week, and we will talk to you next Tuesday.
Always a pleasure. Mā te wā.
Mā te wā.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Thank you very